Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
The last one. The last one was about... My memory isn't very good. No, I remember. I went walking in the morning. It was very cold. But tell her I wore my sweater. She worries about that sort of thing. I saw they had torn down that old building where you and the other children used to play. Tell her that it rained for 2.5 days. I don't know if she can see the sky. Where they're keeping her.
Great Greg gives egregious agreements.
What?
Great Greg gives egregious agreements.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that this is some sort of a new warm-up exercise.
Great Greg gives egregious agreements.
I'm going to further...
Great Greg gives egregious agreements. That's hard to say.
I'm going to take an executive action here.
Great Greg gives egregious... Wait.
Seashell.
I'm going to declare that the podcast has begun.
Great Greg gives egregious agreements.
Even if we haven't concluded our... vocal warm-up exercises so that we can have those smooth, delicious voices that you love coming into your ears
podcast.
Every week.
Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome
Spy
to
Report.
It's Got Star Trek
Spy
Podcast.
Spy Report.
You have digitally turned on the It's Got Star Trek Podcast. This is
Spy
how
Report.
We always sound. Everything's normal. Everything's fine. This is episode 185 of the It's Got Star Trek Podcast. We're ready to go.
We're ready to do this.
Oh, hey.
What's up?
All right. Before we start the podcast, I would like to, one of our audience fans wished me a happy birthday, and I would just like to say thanks, because I'm not on Twitter, because when you're over 75, it's hard to do. Twitter is just not, I just don't get it. I'm
so
over 75.
Jesse is not that much older than Dan, nor I. Dan and I are in a similar age bracket.
Bracket.
Jesse is very close to that age bracket, but with
are we over the generational age bracket?
There's a sufficient division that we learn division differently, and as a result,
sufficient division admission.
I don't think I can even do that.
I've got a sufficient division admission. I can't remember what I'm saying anymore. Sufficient division of emission.
You're just interrupting what I'm saying.
You remember something if it's just made up gibberish?
Patrick interrupted. Well, Patrick bounced off you. Patrick bounced off you, and then I interrupted Patrick. Okay, guys, keep at it. I'm sorry.
Patrick tried to start the podcast.
I'm just saying I'm not on Twitter, and it was Jesse from the Crusher Convo. She said happy birthday.
Yeah, Jesse and Michelle. Michelle as well.
Yeah.
Michelle as well.
I think Patrick was on their podcast.
Michelle as well.
And he told them, he probably told them because he was at my birthday party.
At my birthday. Michelle as well as well.
It was a fun birthday party.
Yeah.
It was a very fun time hanging out with the Crusher Convo folks. Jesse and Michelle, and having a great conversation. I think that episode is scheduled to drop, as the kids say. I don't like that term, but it's a colloquial term that people understand.
I think people probably don't even say that anymore. That's a 10 or 15 year old.
It could be.
What does that mean?
Well, what it does mean is I think that episode is scheduled to be released on July 2nd.
I think people went back to saying release.
if you're listening to this in the future after July 2nd, 2023, you need not wait. You can scurry right over to the Crusher Convo podcast and listen to my guest spot. We discussed the TNG classic, The Game, in which Wesley walks in on his mom playing the mind sex
game. And what happens?
Sex game. Yes, okay.
Well, wait, did we do that one?
I thought we did, but we didn't.
Oh yeah, I don't think we did.
I looked it up, and it's not. We did. In my mind, we did the game.
We have referenced it,
I think we've
always just thought about how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Understood.
So we should do that sometime. But in the meantime,
well, we're going to do Voyager.
Yeah. Well, today we'll do Voyager.
And you know who's on this episode?
Well, we're getting
who's on this Voyager episode.
I just wanted to first.
B'Elanna's on it.
That's exactly right.
Okay, I get it.
B'Elanna's on it.
Yes, in this case, every once in a while, B'Elanna is on the podcast or is in the episode on the podcast.
B'Elanna's on it.
Well, we've gotten off to an excellent start.
Auspicious.
Here. Okay. Yes. Happy birthday.
They call it auspicious.
Happy birthday, Jesse. Thank you, Crusher Convo. Head over, check out their very excellent podcast. They've got tons of podcasts in there. Even though they're only on like episode, like I think six, coming up on six right now. They did they covered all the Star Trek Picard. So as bonus episodes. So they've got tons of episodes. So go check it out. Go right listen. On. This episode, which we're alluding to, oddly coyly,
coyly like a slinky.
What?
Coily.
Got coils.
No.
Slinky. Slinky.
This did I mention this is episode 100? I did say it 185. I said it in a goofy voice.
Yeah, you did.
I was all like, "That's episode 185." But to get slowly back on track. This episode, we will be discussing Star Trek Voyagers, Season 2 episode. It's episode number 12. I don't know why my verbal constructions this evening.
Season 2.
Seem to be purposefully obtuse. They're not. It's not purposeful. I'm just in a...
I love your stories.
I'm in a giggly mood here. Perhaps to counteract the fact that this is a real touching and fucked up story. It's like one of the most fucked up things. I have very little recollection of this
really
episode.
It is really touching.
I haven't even mentioned the episode title yet. It's season 2, episode 12, Resistance. It was interesting that it didn't have anything to do with the Borg.
They've probably got the Resistance movement under surveillance.
Yes.
We told you already. We don't know anything about the Resistance. Yes.
You can't deny being in contact with the Resistance.
Besides, he's involved with the Alsurian Resistance movement.
It's
he would
like,
be physical resistance.
It's one of those episodes where they just keep
saying the name of the episode.
The name of
wait,
the
like
episode.
This one? Wait.
Physical resistance is
futile? Resistance. Is it futile?
Physical resistance is
futile? No, it's
no.
Ineffective.
Ineffective. That was.
Did you get that?
Yes.
I want me to do it again.
Physical resistance. Yes.
The people that wrote the episode were
physical
sure that they were going to say it differently.
Physical resistance is
futile. Is it futile? No. It's
they made a point of saying ineffective.
Is it futile? No. It's
ineffective.
Okay. Are
there's
we good?
A fine line between futile and effective.
So.
Yes.
We're bringing some small semblance of order back.
Let's start
podcast.
The podcast.
Rakana! No!
Okay, so Dan is being very distracting over here. But that's quite all right. That's his function. This is primary.
We have insufficient
function,
evidence to dismiss either conclusion.
Yes. This episode, Resistance, finds our hero crew on some planet looking for some business.
They need to get something to fix their
Tellarium.
Jiggity jams.
Tellarium, which is a real thing.
Is it a real thing?
Is it
apparently.
Real? Is it a, oh, yes. Is it on the
Dan's one of them looking him, he's one of them looking him, look him up types.
According to Wikipedia.
Look it up.
Tellarium is a chemical element with the symbol TE and atomic number of 52.
Oh, it is, 52.
It is a brittle, mildly toxic, rare, silver-white metalloid.
Metalloid.
It's
that sounds
most of
up.
Those things on the table.
That's like when incels call women
femoids. Oh lord.
It's chemically
metalloid.
It's chemically related to selenium.
Metalloid.
Like an alkaloid.
It's a metalloid.
It's chemically related to selenium and sulfur or selenium. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Beware the metalloids.
It is occasionally found in native form as elemental crystals. So that's probably why they use it, because it's crystals and it helps their crystal
drive. They always need a crystal on that warp
drive. I'm cool with them using real stuff.
We know they're at the planet collecting tellarium.
The first person we see is sneaky Neelix.
Sneaky
Neelix.
Neelix is actually worth a shit in this episode. He's halfway decent.
Well,
he's halfway you fucking useful.
Because he's being all sneaky and he's lying.
He's like, I know how to be a sneak in the fucking Delta.
But this is I actually have all that he's contributed, like in terms of dialogue, anything that really contributed anything to the episode. We have there's three instances. This one.
Someone must have told them we were coming. The Mokra have informants everywhere.
Okay, now this is another one. Mm-hmm. So just a...
The Mokra have informants everywhere.
So that's his first tip.
I'm glad they... isn't Mokra is such a great name? Because that's one of my favorite vegetables, Mokra.
Yeah, I'm not...
Because he goes in the gumbo.
Yeah, I'm not a big Mokra man.
Oh, Mokra's so good.
Are you making a joke on okra?
You can fry Mokra?
So
Mokra.
Jesse does legitimately really like okra. Now, I do as well, but I think Jesse is like...
Mokra goes in the gumbo.
So, okay, so...
I thought the Mokra sounded like some sort of alien coffee.
It's actually spelled like M-O-K, or like M-Okra.
So as I was saying, Neelix contributed about three different things. That was the first.
The Mokra have informants everywhere.
Now here's the second thing that he contributed.
The Mokra are paranoid and hostile. They have little use for diplomacy. I wouldn't be surprised if they started shooting at us immediately.
And then the third one, the last one he had to contribute was...
He's not like any Mokra I've ever met. Yeah. I can't believe he'll really help us.
Because Neelix is a racist piece of shit.
He's not like any Mokra.
He also said something about how he didn't think Darud was like was a spy or anything. So I guess that counts too. But like, that's all he basically did this episode. And he snuck around. He did sneak around. And he implicitly... helped us through the episode. His presence sort of like, it was implied that he went through and got all the intel.
He was halfway decent.
But he didn't do any, but he halfway useful. But none of his dialogue really expressed that to my recollection. It was mostly just him telling us what the Mokra
like. He was sitting in meetings with fucking Chakotay and shit. Like,
well, the senior staff of Voyager is hilarious because it's got like a couple of ensigns, you know, some criminals, some terrorists.
Yeah, like a couple of terrorists and a criminal.
I think it's great. It's great Star Trek. It's just, it's kind of funny. And you it's more acute in this scenario where Janeway, Tuvok, and B'Elanna are out of commission. because like when you get Harry in charge of fixing the engines, it's like, no offense, I like Harry. Harry's a great character.
Oh,
but
he's great. Yeah.
Do you really need an ensign being all like, I'll be making the decisions here?
You need B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna's on it.
There we go. But you know who's not on it? Damn.
I hit the button. I hit the button and it didn't do anything. So what they were fighting, so I guess they thought they were subversives is just why they fought them on the planet. And I got a question. Is B'Elanna an In-N-Out burger? Because she served them the old triple double fist, that is.
Okay. I've never been to an In-N-Out burger and I don't.
They have a burger called the triple double, and
Jesse,
given
that we live on the East Coast, you'd have to travel about as far to go to an In-N-Out burger as Dan did to make that joke.
Oh shit, you motherfucker!
That was a good burn. Mm-hmm. It was a good burn. We've been practicing burns offline.
She gave him
like, off of the podcast.
She gave him the triple.
Try to get good at burning.
She gave him the triple double fist. She hit him three times with that double fist.
Yes.
Three times. She knocked him out. She gave him the triple double from In-N-Out. Fist, that is.
Yes.
She gave him the triple. That Darude looked like Jay Moore to me.
Now, are you talking about the sexy desert people in the Zelda game in Breath of the Wild? Is that Darude?
No,
or are you talking about the song?
You're thinking of the pea hats or whatever.
The song? What's
the
song?
Isn't something called a pea hat?
What's the song? The song with
the
Darude?
Song song.
The Darude Sandstorm? From the 2000s?
You're asking me, but I think you know the answer.
I'm making conversation.
I don't know
this
what
is a
he's
podcast.
Asking.
This is we're
I mean,
we're having a conversation for entertainment purposes.
Don't force me into your lies. Like,
it's not a lie. I'm just asking about the Darude Sandstorm.
You know the answer. Okay.
I'm not asking you to sing it. I'm not going to sing it. You don't got to sing it.
Yeah, that Darude Sandstorm. Yeah.
Yeah,
I know that song.
That was like an early 2000s
right.
thing.
Yeah, it was.
Apropos of nothing.
The
as
early
2000s.
Before that, there was Two Unlimited. They did that. Or did they do that? No, they did the
ninjutsu.
Or no, they did the one that was like.
Was that the Mortal Kombat?
No, the Mortal Kombat was different. Mortal Kombat was different. Mortal Kombat was different and it was better.
That's not late. Yes, it was better. That's early.
That was late 90s.
The Mortal Kombat one was like the same riff, but it was better. I don't know who did Mortal Kombat. That's a badass fucking song. He's all like, fight, fatality.
Raiden.
Yeah.
Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's really awesome. I apologize. I was interrupting a point. My slogan
We're
is
old.
Apropos of nothing. Jesse doesn't have a slogan. He just says non sequiturs from time to time. And Dan's slogan is, as I was trying to say.
What were we talking about?
I don't recall. You're supposed to say, as I was trying to say, and then you make the point.
Oh, so you're telling me. So I'm not playing into this game of yours. No, you're trying to lead me down a path, just like with that fake question about Darude a second ago. You're leading me down a path here.
Okay, it was not a fake question. I don't know what a fake question
Well, you already knew the answer. He's like, what's that Darude?
A fake question.
What's that song?
A rhetorical question.
What's that Sandstorm? I can't remember. Sandstorm?
Sandstorm.
He's starting to slip into Trip Tucker the Third. Cam, what were you saying, Cam?
I was saying was that Darude guy looked like Jay Moore.
Oh, yeah, word. Okay. That's the point. That's the point.
That was the funny one.
That was the point.
And I agree, even though I think most of our audience won't know who Jay Moore is. Because
look it up, baby.
He's not around anymore.
He's briefly in that new Amazon Prime movie, Air, starring Jason Bateman and Matt Damon.
Really?
I haven't seen that.
He's briefly in there for like a second. So he was a comedian turned serious actor.
Yeah. No, he was totally a thing for a bit.
And not like super
serious.
And
then a cartoon character.
He was? Who was he?
He was on something.
Okay, Dan, can you clarify? That was a sound clip you just played. Jesus Christ. Oh my God. Okay. I see some possibilities there. Interesting. What we were talking still about that
Darude.
Yeah.
Darude.
I know this is all over the place. But Janeway and Neelix and Tuvok and B'Elanna are on this planet. They're trying to get some deal done, trade some Tellarium. Apparently what's going on is Neelix has gotten a little sample, and then he's brought it over to Janeway and the rest of the totally shady, not very good at being undercover crew. Mm-hmm. As a reminder, we not too long ago, we did Future's End, and they also had a problem being undercover in Future's End. But they're standing around in this market looking all shady. Janeway tests the material and is like, all right, this is some good shit. Mm-hmm. And then, so I believe what happens then, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I believe what happens then is Neelix goes back to be like, all right, the deal's on. The stuff is good. The deal's on. So he's out of the picture when the Mokra assholes come
Mokra
and start being all like fucking people up, and then they're like getting in a fight where they I think both Janeway and B'Elanna do what I don't know what their term is. Do you know the term, Dan, when you hit somebody with the bottom of your hand?
It's like a palm strike.
Like a palm strike.
They
both do that to people wearing what are clearly very, very high grade motorcycle helmets.
Yeah.
And they're like, whap! And the guys are all like, no! Like, well, what the fuck is the point of that helmet, man?
Yeah, yeah. It was a classic Star Trek fight. What was I watching recently where they were doing something similar?
Was it Star Trek Picard?
No. No, it was...
Was it Time Tracks?
I've never seen Time Tracks.
Oh, Time Tracks is great.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Was it Mr. Belvedere?
No, it wasn't Mr. Belvedere.
So it's even further back.
No, it was something recently. I just saw this week.
Mr. Belvedere.
Was it Out of This World?
Is Mr. Belvedere available on any sort of streaming service?
Maybe it was that Sweet Tooth show.
I think Mr. Belvedere is available on some form of streaming service.
I would hope so. I would have to research.
I think I saw its icon somewhere along the way.
Yeah?
Maybe it's on... Pluto, or it could be on Tubi. Tubi's good.
It was that an ABC?
If you go to Tubi
or an NBC,
you can find Captain Janeway in all sorts of other stuff. Because she was on all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, she was.
She was in a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
Doesn't he sound like that guy from
Kate Mulgrew's great.
This guy, he sounds.
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
He sounds like that guy from, it was in Freaks and Geeks. He was the principal, and then he was also in some other stuff. But he also kind of sounds like that other dude from, you know, with the big beard, and he's in comedies, and he's also in Stranger Things.
Santa Claus.
He's that guy with the
Brett Gelman.
Brett Gelman.
It kind of sounds like Brett Gelman too. He's dead?
Wake me up, the lieutenant.
No, he's great.
I thought you said he was dead.
No, he's awesome.
I didn't say that.
Okay, you're talking about Janeway and palm striking to the helmets.
It was a good Star Trek fight.
Yeah, it was a decent one.
No shade to Picard. I think Picard was great. I found the whole, like, Janeway undercover in a village. Not a village, but, you know, like in a shady hallway. Now, why am I picking these stupid words in a goddamn shady market?
You're blowing it.
An alleyway market, an alien planet. I found this one way more convincing. Maybe not way more. But this and the fight, it all, like, made more sense to me geographically. I could understand what was going on a little bit better. I don't mention that to rag on Picard because we are fans of Picard. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that because during Picard, we mentioned there were a couple fights that were cool, but a little hard to follow. And it looked like they didn't have a lot of, like, space to maneuver in. Whereas here, this is a good example of where I thought it was a good 90s style TV Star Trek fight.
The first season of Picard had, like, a pro wrestling moves in it.
Yeah.
They were doing all sorts of crazy shit. Like, it seems like they had a different choreographer.
The first season of Picard is out there, man.
It's got them brother and sister weirdness.
Which is more out there, the first or second season, though? The second one is pretty fucking...
Second one is, like, out there in a space-time continuum sort of way.
Second one's out there in a kind of disappointing way. It's like you're going along, you're like, okay, this is cool, it's cool, and then you're like, there's, like, cool bits in it.
Oh, that FBI guy? Where's he? He's going to come back. He's going to come back. No, he's going to play a role later. Back. No.
Wow. That's Star Trek. Well, you can go back and listen to it. We've
discussed it.
Can now officially state that we have covered each and every episode that there will ever be of Star Trek Picard. So feel free to scroll back in the feed.
That's why we're back. Awesome.
Or go to the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, and you can sort by series.
It's got Picard.
Click
bitch.
On the series, and boom, all the links will be there for the specific times we've discussed those series. In this case, right now, right here today, we're discussing Star Trek Voyager, Season 2.
I love your stories.
Episode 12, Resistance.
Is what? Is it futile?
It's got nothing to do with capacitors or anything like that. It's all about Resistance.
Is Resistance futile? No, it's...
Ineffective.
What about Resistance training? I've heard Resistance training can be quite effective. But it depends, I suppose.
I guess it depends on how you do it. Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't.
I don't. Are you talking about circuit training with resistance circuit training?
Okay, so we're dilly dallying a little bit on this episode. We just don't want to get to this. We'll talk about, like, all the serious stuff in the next break.
The teleplay is by Lisa Klink.
Yeah.
The story was by Jan Michael Vincent. Oops, no, I'm sorry. I mean, Michael Jan Friedman.
What?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
What?
Oh, my,
I did the
foolish,
same thing.
My foolish brain. What am I even thinking of?
What?
I'm glad somebody did a joke.
What?
Okay. So.
What? So apparently.
Jan Quadri Vincent.
We're still in this thing where.
What?
The Mokra capture. Mokra. Who do they capture? They capture Tuvok and B'Elanna.
Mm-hmm.
But. They almost capture Janeway, but are unable to because, enter stage right, Calum jumps in.
Joel Grey.
Played by Joel Grey. And Joel Grey is the father of...
Jean Grey.
No. Well, that's a good guess. Kind of. Not really.
This is going to be interesting.
Jennifer Grey.
Oh.
Of Dirty Dancing fame.
I know.
And he is the son... of Broadway and, well, no, he was a Broadway and film star. His dad was Mickey Katz, who is a famed comic singer, probably most famous for singing the Davy Crockett song.
Davy Crockett. I've heard of that fellow.
I looked up a couple of other famous songs. Google lists these as his most popular songs. So Davy Crockett is listed number one. Then there's Knish Doctor. That Pickle in the Window.
Is that the one that's like, that? How much is that pickle in the window?
Yeah. I don't know what sound a pickle makes, because that song normally has the dogs.
How much is that
puppy in the
middle? Does it go just like...
That's the way the pickle squirts.
Oh, we shouldn't make these noises.
You can
noises.
Go listen to... We did an episode last
year. People hate those noises.
No, they love it. They love the... Oh, God. We did an It's Not Star Trek episode called It's Got Pickle.
Yeah, but it required a disclaimer at the beginning that...
Oh, yeah, because we totally chow down on some pickles.
If you have soundophobia or whatever that's called, like, you have a problem.
Here's some other songs by Mickey Katz, father of... Joel Grey, Broadway and film star, starred in Cabaret and played Calum.
Understood.
Calum in this episode. Other songs by his dad were "Where Is My Pants?"
Where is my pants?
What does that mean?
I always ask that.
The Poiple Kishke Eater. The Poiple Kishke Eater. The Poiple Kishke Eater.
That's not possible.
What makes it poiple? Sweet potato.
It's spelled poiple.
Use a sweet potato.
I'm a schlemiel of fortune.
It's too dangerous.
I don't understand that particular pun. I'm guessing schlemiel. It's a pun.
That's a...
Long story
I
short,
get what that means.
I know what a schlemiel... There's a schlemiel and a schlemazel.
Right.
And Jerry Gergen.
He's on the
Parks
same.
And Recreation, he's both. He's both the schlemiel and the schlemazel.
That's
it's like the person who causes the bad thing or the person the bad thing happens to.
Right. That's the Thank only you. Time I ever heard that explained in Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
Well, So,
are you getting to the part where that guy saves Janeway and then he's all like, "You're my daughter," and she's all like, "Awkward."
It was awkward because he kept all touching on her.
This whole episode is really awkward.
Yeah, it's really.
There's that one time when she's just like, "I'm sorry, I have to go."
Yeah, like right. The I think these
when
sounds.
He's like, "Can you write me a letter?"
Well, these sounds I was playing earlier that was like, I think that might be B'Elanna. There was one that was like, okay, that was like.
Do you not label these?
I do, but I gave him a dirty name instead.
Oh no!
So I can't remember. But.
Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you.
They're all labeled Janeway, so I'll just have to trust they're all Janeway.
Oh, no.
So this one right here.
This one, yeah. Okay.
That's when she first woke up in his place, Cayman's place.
Oh, really?
And then these two. That's when she discovered that he like changed her clothes.
It's similar to this scene in Back to the Future when Marty McFly wakes up and he's not wearing any pants.
Yeah.
And his mother has taken his pants off of him.
And she thinks his name is Calvin Klein
because
that's what it says on his underpants.
And she probably looked at his penis because the whole undercurrent, the whole subtext of that movie.
She's into that
shit. The whole plot centers on a mom. Never mind. Y'all have seen it.
If you haven't seen it,
it's a great movie.
You're not listening to the podcast.
okay. All right. Keep going. Keep going there, Dan.
So those. Well, that was it. That was where the. That was her being freaked out because he changed her clothes. You know, and you know, it was a really uncomfortable scenario. Right. The whole thing. What was next?
Well, this whole business is sort of interesting to me because you have this A story and the B story. And the A story is Janeway dealing with Calum, and she's trying to rescue her people, of course. And we'll talk about that in a second. But then you have this B story, which is the crew, the remaining crew, the remaining ragtag senior staff, including Neelix, are trying
Chakotay.
They're trying to rescue the crew, the rescue their lost colleagues. And the thing is that this story, this side of the story is so fucking rote and boring. Mm-hmm. But when that might normally be a problem, except I think in this case it's not, because I think it's a good balance to how serious and upsetting it is engaging, this story, the A story with Janeway and Calum, but it is continuously fucked up and upsetting. Mm. So I kind of like that they had this like really like, all right, we fixed the engines. Right. Okay. We're going to say right. stupid things like their orbital sensor net covers the entire planet. All right. Good job there, Harry. You know.
They have metaphysic shields.
Wait.
The prison is surrounded by metaphysic shields.
Wait, speaking of, that was actually my favorite line, just the way he spoke it.
I've been studying their orbital sensor net. I've been studying their orbital sensor net.
Isn't there something that's just like really here?
Like he's not quite getting through it.
Orbital sensor net.
Orbital
sensor net.
Yeah.
Orbital sensor net.
I agree.
He's pronouncing that really like hard.
Orbital
sensor net.
I like Harry Kim.
Orbital sensor net.
Yeah, I do like Harry Kim.
That was a ridiculous line, but it was my favorite sounding line in the whole episode. He was getting some attitude, actually, in this episode.
Baby. I thought you were like, he was getting some ass.
He was getting some ass-titude.
That's a non sequitur.
He was, this one.
We're going to reduce our power demands even further. We're going to have to drop the shields.
I don't want to leave the ship defenseless this close to a hostile planet.
All of the systems are already offline. Life support is at minimal. You ask for options, that's our last one.
So that's some attitude, and here's a shorter one also some attitude.
That's the best head start I can give you.
Then it'll have to do. How long will it take to modify the deflector?
I can do it right now.
He was secretly like, he was secretly like, yeah, that's the best I can do. It's better than what you could do.
It's when you're an ops, you have an attitude when like somebody in command.
Do you think that was the unspoken, what was unspoken there? Is that like when Chakotay was like, when he was like, I guess that's the best we can do. And you think when Henry was like, do you think Henry was secretly like,
Harry?
Do you think Harry was,
Harry is short for
Henry. Do you think Harry was secret?
Harry is not short for Henry.
Yeah, it is.
It's a mispronunciation. Move on.
No, it is. Harry is a nickname for Henry.
Well, I thought Harry was short for Harold.
It could be Harold as well.
We can move on. It's not a. It's not like a. It's not like
Prince Harry's name. Prince Harry's name is Henry.
All right, I'll believe you.
Anyway, I was just saying. I think that Harry secretly was like, damn right, it's the best I can do. You know, it's better than what you could do.
For me, my favorite part of that line is where Chakotay is like, how long will it take you or whatever? And Kim is like, I can do it right now. And then Chakotay is all like, that's great, because that means we don't have to stop the scene here and then like come back to it later to finish it. We can just go like right into, we can immediately start getting shot at.
Kind of a different scene.
Yeah. Okay, how about this? Let's take a break, and then when we get back, we can start dipping into the Mokra. Janeway and Caleb. Mokra. Getting a little more details. All right, we will be right back.
And we're back.
Patrick hates it when he does that.
No, I love it. I love it. It's a good indication. Jesse's like, hey, he's got shit to do tomorrow.
As long as, you know. It's tastefully.
As long as B'Elanna's on it.
So as long as B'Elanna's on it. I'm not even. I don't have it like one button that says B'Elanna's on it. Like in the corner
but
of my screen.
You're my number one Dan.
you should have like a separate laptop with just that.
B'Elanna's on it. B'Elanna's on it.
Damn right. Damn right.
What I was going to say is that, the Mokra, we got this Ogris guy who's like, who seemed like he was being generous, but he wasn't, obviously. Now, it's confusing because maybe it is not confusing and I'm just confused, is that he said, like, when they were like, we were looking for our people, and he was like, I'll find your people for you, right?
Yeah.
And, but was he really intending to give them the people? He thought they were subversives, so like, why did he say he was going to get them? Originally, I thought he was going to fetch them and give them back to the Voyager, so the Voyager could...
But there would still be... Janeway would still be missing, so...
Well, I thought the goal he was going to have was to give them all back so they could get out of their hair. Basically be like, I don't want any trouble from you. You guys go off. But it seems like he assumed they were part of the Resistance.
Yes.
And so why did he offer to find them? I'm not really sure. Maybe it was... Or maybe he was just placating them, I guess. I don't know.
This episode overall, I think, is very well written. I think it's well paced. I think most of it holds together very well. There are a couple little bits and pieces, and I think that you've just identified one, Dan, where I think we're supposed to take what Neelix says at face value. The problem is we as the audience just don't trust him. Mm-hmm. Like, why would he know?
Absolutely.
It really sounds like he's being super racist.
He's a space creep.
So we're...
Those other guys automatically suspect him because he's a fucking space creep.
So the thing is that he's all like telling us that they're all pieces of shit. All these motherfuckers are pieces of shit. Don't trust them. And then we're presented with a Mokra person, this Ogris fella.
Mokra.
He's coming off as sort of fascist, and he's kind of coming off as asshole-y, but not unreasonable, right? He's like, okay, we'll check it out. And so we then find out that no, in fact, he knows exactly where at least Tuvok and B'Elanna are, and he thinks they're part of this Resistance business, so he's going to torture them and do all this other stuff. So I think retroactively, we're supposed to understand that Neelix was being totally correct. It's just that we don't trust Neelix. The way it was written was awkward. The way it was acted was a little bit awkward. So I don't think that comes across super clearly. And you kind of have to retroactively piece that back together. Once you do that, then you're like, okay, I know what type of story they're telling. These guys are assholes. And so the point of this is going to be like anti-asshole.
I liked when he...
Your classic Star Trek anti-asshole story.
Well, I like when Ogris said...
I'm afraid that will be difficult in the current climate of mistrust.
I like that line. It's nothing...
The actor's great.
It's Alan Scarf. The line isn't anything new or anything, but like his delivery is great
that
for a
last,
line.
Play that again, because pay special attention to the very last word.
I'm afraid that will be difficult in the current climate of mistrust.
Mistrust. But also, I also...
And somehow Palpatine returned.
But I also like how they specifically didn't say, I don't trust you.
He made it annoyingly complicated in a charmingly annoying, obnoxious way.
When you do that, what you do is when you say, I don't trust you, you're saying that you actively don't trust someone. So it's like you're partly responsible because you actively don't do it. Yeah. When you say...
He was being diplomatic.
But when you say in the current...
Which goes against what Neelix was saying.
When you're saying in the current climate of distrust, it means like you have nothing to do with it. It's not, you take no responsibility for the mistrust or the lack of trust, which is the same as mistrust. You don't take responsibility for those actions. They just exist. Yeah. And so it takes the responsibility off yourself. Right, to be diplomatic. He's saying,
getting a diplomatic response.
Yeah, he's saying, fuck you, but he's saying it in a way that you can't hate him for it, even though secretly you have to hate
him
for it.
Like, we're both saying fuck you to each other, but in the diplomatic algorithm.
Yeah, the diplomatic algorithm.
There was snake your way in there.
There was another line that he actually delivered. It was right at the end.
So much tragedy for one man to bear.
I thought something about that. He had some good deliveries. He told us all the backstory
for everything.
Just like Janeway makes great faces. I've always said that she always has great facial expressions. Yeah, she does. She did one after she dressed up as the was trying to seduce that guy. You remember that scene where she was going to seduce that guy?
Right.
Try getting Picard to do that, huh?
She pretended to be a good time girl.
Could you believe Picard would do that? Anyways. Are you asking
if I believe that Picard would become a good time girl?
Yeah.
In order to do a mission? I'd like to think yes.
But so she gave a great look
after when that dude gave her the necklace and she was.
I'd like to see Worf as a good time girl.
After she
He's my good time boy.
After she seduced
you and here we you and he were
He's
buddies,
definitely a good time.
Yeah. After she seduced him, Kalem said, I like when you do that, or whatever it was, that he was like, I like your strategy. That's what he said. And she gave this look, like this childish, girlish little childish smile. She gave a, ha, I did it.
So Kalem was approving her strategy of like offering a hand job to the bad guy?
That's apparent.
He thought she was his daughter.
He was telling
his daughter in his delusion. Mm-hmm. He was telling his daughter, which, by the way, I know most people have seen the episode when they listen to the podcast. I'm realizing now that if you are one of the small number of people who just like, you just listen to have fun. You're just like, I just like these guys are good. They're so goofy. I'm just going to listen to them.
This Dan guy is always saying.
We haven't explained, not that we do, but we haven't explained clearly that the situation with Kalem is that he believes, because he's a... under some delusion, he believes that
he's
Janeway,
been through a traumatic event.
Yes, he believes that Janeway is his daughter, and that's so, what this relationship is formed. And I bring that up now because I'm now made uncomfortable because I did see the scene you're talking about, and I just didn't think about it at the time.
Right, and that was not my point I was making.
I realized
it when it was happening. I was like, that's kind of weird. I wasn't going to bring it up, but I guess you know I'm glad it didn't. If someone did, and
I
it was
think
not
it is
my,
incumbent
me.
On one of us to if when we're watching Star Trek, if incest comes up, mm-hmm. we're not. Pro or anti incest, we're neutral on the topic,
but
we do need to. As if it's newsworthy, it should be mentioned.
So, anyways, my
it
point
should be marked. You don't want the audience to be like, you know, those It's Got Star Trek podcast guys. They didn't mention the part where the guy thought his daughter was all like going to be all like, blah, 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 and he was like, that was cool.
My point I was making was that she gave a very very excited sort of exuberant smile, not because her pseudo father was coveting her whatever her. Oh God, I can't. I don't even
her,
know.
I think you could just stop the sentence at her. Yeah. You could just say coveting her.
Yeah.
I mean, which itself is perhaps a stretch, an unfair stretch. But
no, he wasn't. He wasn't. Okay, yeah. But she.
I don't.
But
think
now, he was now I'm on this. Now I'm on this topic because you fucking brought it up. I was saying she was. I can't help but think about it now. What I was saying is she was exuberant because she was excited that she had such a good strategy that won. You know, and she was like, "Yeah, I did it." And just like when Harry did one earlier in the episode too, when he said,
I like how you have the whole warp engine boot up. Sound.
Warp engines are back online.
Goddamn right there.
All systems normal.
And he gave her like a super smile. He's like, yeah. He gave both Janeway and Harry gave the same kind of smile. Just like, I did it.
He was feeling good because he's like, you know, it's ridiculous that they put an ensign in charge of fixing the goddamn warp engines. Right.
You know, I did have to play that whole, I made it a point to play that whole warping up noise because it was like.
Warping up.
Because it's so rare that you get a nice isolated warp up sound.
Warp up, yeah. Warp booting and this up. Was, warp this was, drive booting up.
And this was like, I was
dilithium like. Dilithium crystal matrix so, just getting saturated with that antimatter.
So I had to get. I had
little mini crystalline entities in the engine.
So I had to get the whole sound.
That's
of,
what I like to imagine.
Okay, moving on.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you had the whole sound. I find it soothing and relaxing. Booting up the warp drive. What's the next?
Harry Kim.
Harry. Yes. Haribo.
Haribo.
Do you want some, Jesse, do you want some Haribo?
Yes, I do.
Jesse, do you want some Haribo?
It's delicious.
I've never heard you talk like that before.
That's a funny voice.
Oh, you know what's also clever?
Is this Jesse's new character?
Was also clever when that guy was when Ogris was grilling Darud or Darod or Darad or whatever. And he was like, and this was after the old man got Calum got caught. He was all like saying like, "You, I'm looking for someone, a woman."
Oh yeah, that's
and then
that
and Darad and Darad goes like, "I haven't seen any woman." And then Ogris is like, "There are two right over there. You see them, don't you?" That was I thought that was really clever. I thought that was a clever way of tricking someone.
Yeah, and partly why I thought it was clever was because it took me a second to understand what the fuck he was talking about. Yeah. And I was like, "Oh," and I was like, "Oh man, I probably would have fallen for that."
Yeah. So speaking of that scene, there was like,
Come on in.
It was really uncomfortable.
Oh, when he started doing everything. So, okay.
I seem to have lost my hat. Come on in.
It must be stated that Joel Grey
Come on in.
Does such a fucking brilliant job in this episode.
Come on in. I seem to have lost my hat.
From beginning to end, including the scene. Yeah,
I seem to have lost my hat.
It's upsetting. It conjures images of marionettes.
I seem to have lost my hat.
Of horrifying marionettes and weird dancing little clown people.
Come on in. I seem to have lost my hat. Come on in. Okay. I seem to have lost my hat.
I don't know the best way to convey the simultaneous feelings of awe in this performance and with the writing that they gave him and this that he's so loving and playful but
and he has a gross fucking nose.
Jesus.
So somebody cut him up.
And their broken, wrinkled noses.
For real, dude.
I was gonna mention the noses. I mean, I was gonna mention the fucked up nose business, like after heaping praise on Joel Grey.
What the hell do you want from me?
There's like
from this performance, Margalimo.
There's Delta Quadrant gross face, but these people got Delta Quadrant gross nose.
Yeah, it is. I do think is one of the more intense Star Trek nose
like they
bits.
Just got cut up.
It is. I mean, you know, I just thought it was a little peculiar.
That scene disgusting. Was weird, though. When he was like, "I'll go like, I like my hat." It was something about that made me feel like it gave me creepy crawlies.
It was weird.
It made my skin crawl.
You know what it is?
It wasn't cringe. It made my skin crawl. It was different.
Not that you necessarily would have thought of this outright, but it sort of evokes a similar feeling to, you know, the stories. You know what? Remember, you know that whole like. The Jerry Lewis movie, the Holocaust movie with the clown that no one's been able to see except for Harry Shearer for some reason. It's like locked in some vault until it's going to come out. But it's a movie where he made where he was about like Jerry Lewis plays a clown in a concentration camp who does like gags to like distract the guards and keep them from like murdering children or something.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like that sounds and then intense. There's like and then there was like a what was that name, Roberto Benigni, he had something similar, you know, where there was some similar kind of vibes where it's like this when you have to employ charm and clowning for the purpose of avoiding fascists, it's upsetting. I think it's not a disconnect in a negative way. It's like they're playing with that disconnect, the opposition of the joyfulness of clowning and the horrible fascist nightmare that's maybe not fully realized in the confines of this episode, other than the literal jackboots.
Another version of the story,
motorcycle helmets.
And another version of the story. Calum did that when he was all like being like, "Hello, I'm a weird guy," you know. Yeah. In another version, Augrus would have like kicked him in the face and like they'd throw him off a cliff or they'd beat the shit out of him or something. But in this one, they didn't, which is like, which is more diabolical or which is worse? I don't know. I guess the brutality of killing someone, of course, is worse. But like the fact that he does it as a form of manipulation,
yes, an example. Because Augrus says that he's like, we leave him as like the mad example, you know, for everyone else to be like, whoa, don't fuck with those guys.
Right. So at first, I thought he was just because he couldn't have been like. I was wondering why he wasn't like beating the shit out of him or something, because that's what I would have expected some kind of person to do. And I figured he was just like, I don't know, being like, this guy's harmless. That's always been a fascinating concept to me. When you're just like this killer animal and you need to eat some killer food and you need to fight someone to get your killer food. Like some other animals, you'll kill that animal so they wouldn't get your killer food. But like some animals would be so weak, you wouldn't even bother. You wouldn't even waste the energy to kill them. You'd be like, I don't need to kill you. I just like kick you aside and you can nip at me while I eat, but I don't give a fuck. So I think that's interesting because like when I think of people who are mean bad guys, I think they just want to kill everybody, but not necessarily. Sometimes it's just not worth their effort to kill people.
Well, and to expand on that, it's not just about what they want. It can also be about the context and the degree of power they have, because even in very powerful sort of fascist dictatorial,
they don't want people to rise up and shit.
There can be, you know, the different degrees of how much control they have, and beating the shit out of a goofy old man
that would have probably
may not be helpful to your like overall business.
It'd be bad for your
if you see, you know, it's the same thing.
People get all pissed off at you.
You're
not going to get votes
in that old Star Wars. You guys heard of this Star Wars stuff?
Star Wars.
You guys heard of this Star Wars stuff? It's the kids across the street are playing this Star
across
Wars.
Across the street?
The kids across the street, they're all
what
like,
does
hey.
What that mean?
I it's know, got Star that's Wars. What I said. I was like, what are you talking about? Star Wars? What?
That's not possible.
But
Darth Vader.
They describe some similar stuff where the Empire is mean and terrible, but they also.
Oh, I've heard of that.
They have to be careful in some places.
I've heard that was propaganda.
Yes. Well,
how can you say that so calmly?
The Empire is about safety and order.
What does that mean?
We have insufficient evidence to dismiss either conclusion.
I was like a good Vulcan conversation. I thought the scenes with B'Elanna and Tuvok were really good.
Yeah.
It was a fun opportunity, early season opportunity to put them together. And because they work well together, you'd expect, I know the expectation is there's going to be some sort of explosive differences between them because she's got her Klingon side.
They're both badasses. Vulcan.
But yeah, I think they're both badasses and they both respect each other. And particularly in this episode, they also communicate. I love that B'Elanna was just straight up asking him questions, and she was like, and then of course, and again, this episode is horrific in so many ways because she was all like, I used to think that Vulcans couldn't feel pain if they didn't want to until I heard
that Jew?
Horrible screaming. Tuvok's all calmly like, well, you know.
Was that you I heard?
Yeah. It was fucked up when she was like, was that I heard? Because she's Klingon, she's half Klingon, so you know she's like, she can handle some. She's not going to get thrown off by just a few little Vulcan squeaks.
She will bite
Vulcan
you.
Squeaks.
You know the classic Vulcan squeak. Do you have a recording, Dan, of a Vulcan squeak? Is that on your
a Vulcan squeak?
Yes, do you have a recording of a Vulcan? No,
that's all I got.
Do you have a Vulcan? Do you have a recording of? Of a young Vulcan boy.
Talking, you said Vulcan, not Klingon. Sorry.
Vulcan boy talking about his Saylot, Ichaya.
No, Ichaya.
I have that recording somewhere. I'm taking his Salat to Ichaya to La Mancha or something.
Your question is based on a faulty assumption.
Man,
that's all the Vulcan I have. That, yeah. And I have.
I regret I have no such reassurance to offer you.
I don't even know why I recorded that one.
And you didn't even do the "We Ain't Found Shit." You don't have the.
I advise caution.
We Ain't Found Shit. No, I haven't. I haven't.
We I've ain't never, found shit.
Never. I never. We never copied found that shit. One. So.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, well, that's fine. That's quite all right.
Look it up.
I guess that's the Vulcan way of telling me to hope for the best.
Yes. You must hope for the best.
I thought that was a perfectly fine way to say hope for the best. Like, usually the Vulcans talk a lot of sense.
We have commented on this in the past, but Star Trek has one of those things often where, on the one hand, they are trying to present very generally fairly progressive ideas and even progressive methods of thinking, right? Progressive approaches, and not just politically progressive. I mean, just sort of conceptually, socially more open-mindedness, more communication, more reaching out across cultures and having different experiences and stuff. And that's a good example here. But what also happens a lot in Star Trek is it's sort of like a two steps forward, one step back thing, because in order to convey the idea of you should converse across cultures, they have people saying things like, "You Vulcans, you Klingons, you are all the same." And then, of course, yes, the point is that the stereotypes don't necessarily hold. But
human,
there's a whole lot of, I'm going to expressly state I'm going to identify you into a category that I've defined.
Well, that's what Harry did to Quark, but then Quark called him out on it. He was all like, "You." He was like, Harry was like, "I heard about you, you, whatever you are, Ferengis." And he's like, "Ensign, I'm shocked," or whatever, fucking. Yeah. He says,
"Well, Deep Space Nine was good at playing with those tropes a little bit more, you know, melding them. I'm making hand motions that are like melding and squishing together."
Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine rules.
Watch it.
Go watch Deep Space Nine. It was
the best.
Voyager's pretty cool too.
Totally.
At the beginning,
this is a very good episode. It's just very upsetting because so many sad things happen and they keep happening.
But it's very touching and It's a good episode for Janeway.
It's a very good episode for Janeway, particularly so maybe early. Hungry?
Particularly for her hair.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe hungry?
It's a good hair episode.
Janeway's hungry? Janeway's got good hair. Are you saying baby hungry? Who's
maybe hungry?
I don't even
maybe
remember.
Hungry? Maybe hungry?
I don't remember this. What is this?
Drink. Maybe hungry?
Was he talking to was that Kaylin?
Some soup.
Kaylin?
Soup.
Okay. I'm getting all confused.
I'm forgetting the soup. I'm forgetting the soup.
I don't think that guy can make any soup. And if he did, I would not eat it.
I'll fix you some soup. I'm forgetting the soup.
Don't eat the soup that the guy fixed.
Maybe hungry?
Does he say that?
Yeah, I think he says maybe hungry.
Maybe.
Okay. It sounds like he's saying baby hungry.
It does sound like he's saying baby hungry, which adds to the creepiness.
Drink. So that's we can focus on that part. We can go back to this
come
one.
Come on in.
Well, I think we've covered most of that. Unless there were any other comments you had about that. Again, the performance was good. It was the whole fascist business, you know, which is mildly upsetting. But
at the beginning of when Chakotay calls it out, he says, "I played the sound, but check it out again. It's 2 seconds."
They've probably got the resistance movement under surveillance.
Do you think he said that because he was part of the Maquis, and they got their ass caught because they were under surveillance from Tuvok.
From Tuvok. They got Tuvok.
So Chakotay, they got Tuvok.
They got Tuvok. Tuvok is good at being undercover. Mm-hmm. The rest of those motherfuckers, they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, they just have to put.
They've probably got the resistance movement under surveillance.
Sorry, they just put something to cover their ears, like a hat to cover their ears. Then they're undercover. That's how Vulcans go undercover. Even I didn't make that up. I know it sounds like I sound like a piece of shit for saying that, but they do it in the show.
Well, the Maquis are a disappointing organization.
Dan looked very sincere when he started yelling.
They just put a hat on and cover their pointy ears.
I didn't make that up.
It's a
real thing. Spock did it all the
time. You know, all Vulcan has to do to blend in with humans.
Tuvok wore a bandana.
He's just got to put a hat on to cover them pointy ears. Yeah. That's all they gotta do.
What about their green pallid skin?
The copper-based blood.
The Vulcans.
They don't have green skin.
Well, they got the green blood.
Green blood. They got the green blood.
They got the green blood.
What about when they're
doesn't
always,
show through their
they're
skin?
They're showing their ass.
Yeah, Jesse's all about this whole Vulcan showing ass thing, which I don't think is real. Jesse insists that there's what was it that showing ass is like an old Vulcan practice where it's like saying fuck you to somebody or something.
Yeah. Well, you're showing your ass. It's like, you know.
I remember learning that our blood before it left our bodies was blue.
Yeah, but you learned wrong.
Yeah, I know.
It depends.
I don't know why I learned that.
Where it is in your body.
I learned people that from a school. I think I learned that in elementary. I feel like a teacher
elementary
told me that.
Elementary school lies to you. Elementary school is still telling people that Columbus was like
FCPS.
Thought the world was flat. He didn't think the world was
back
flat.
When my.
No,
he
thought
the world
that.
Was like shaped like an egg or some shit.
Yeah. So back when my younger brother was in elementary school, like
a long time.
Way early in elementary school, him and his friend were being taught in math class that anything divided by zero is zero, and that is
that's very wrong.
That's so
it's
that's
undefined.
That's offensively wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Zero.
It's not zero.
I mean, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to be teaching kids that.
I think they have this thing where they teach people things wrong the first time when
I hate that
to keep
shit.
It simple. And then they teach you the truth later. And it's like, don't fucking just teach me the truth from the start. And, I don't have to unlearn some shit.
And it's totally fine if in the context of teaching people saying, this is the simplified version.
Right.
It's way more complex, but I'm teaching you the simplified version to get you started, and then you build on that. And what happens is when you don't provide that context, you end up with a lot of people who have taken a couple of semesters of econ and haven't gotten to like the third semester where they're like, all that stuff we taught you, like, doesn't work in the real world. Like, there's so much more that you have to learn to actually model this shit out. It's way more complicated.
How can you say that so calmly?
I know. It is tricky to say it so calmly, but
we gotta do.
Before the next break, we should talk about the soup.
We haven't taken
the soup
a first
business.
Break,
we took a first break.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you some soup.
Oh, Jesse's engaged in the conversation this week. He's like, he doesn't even remember. He's like, this is great.
Soup.
I've been going the whole time.
Soup.
Just to talk a little bit about this relationship between Kalem and Janeway, because
I'm forgetting the soup.
We learn throughout the plot, of course.
Plot.
This very sad plot.
Drink.
That Kalem's delusions and his desire to see Janeway as his daughter is based on the fact that by all accounts, both his wife and his daughter are totally dead. And that his wife is dead because she wanted to fight for something that he was not willing to stick his neck out for, at least initially. And then when she died or got captured from his perspective, he then became motivated to say, okay, fuck these
and then
guys.
Got his fucking
and then got his daughter killed in the process. And so that the guilt, I mean, that's what we're supposed to understand. I think it's, they make that very clear. I think sometimes it doesn't, if you're seeing this episode for the first time, you might not realize how heavy that is, that this entire episode, all this guy's actions are because of these terrible tragedies that he's had to endure. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable, this delusion thing. My question.
So much tragedy for one man to bear.
His nose is all funny.
And his nose is all fucked up and weird. Now, the question I have for both of you is
and the broken, wrinkled noses.
To what degree? Oh, by the way,
that's the Bajorans.
Folks who are confused, go back one episode in the list to our discussion of Deep Space Nine's Waltz.
Waltz,
and you'll understand some of those audio
Gold Ducats.
But
he's a character.
So,
to what degree? I was just wondering. To what degree do you think that Janeway handled this well? She tries to deny.
I think she handled it pretty well.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm just curious because I've seen differing opinions on the internet in terms of how much is, because some people argue, just to lay it out there, some people argue that yes, Janeway is being kind of nice, but she's also using this guy.
Well, when he gave her the necklace, like she probably knew that his wife wasn't going to, I mean, maybe not. Maybe she knew that his wife would be there. I guess you could say, but
I don't know.
I think secretly she was going to give the necklace away and she didn't care. She was using him for that necklace a little bit, I thought. I don't know. Maybe you could argue against that. You could say she did think his wife
was
alive. But
she wanted to get into that place.
Right.
This guy was conveniently.
She had to get there.
Being, you know,
he was going to come along
but
no matter
she
what.
She did keep trying to leave, though, and he kept being like, getting himself in trouble.
I think she realized the severity of everything once he was dying, and she had to say, like, you know, all the stuff about how, like, you know, it's going to be okay.
Well, but I'm saying in the beginning, though, she was like kept trying to like leave, like when she first fell in the ship, and he kept like getting himself in trouble.
Can you write me a letter? And she was like, "I'm sorry, I gotta go."
Yeah, I mean, she could.
That was so upsetting. The whole scene when he's talking, when he's like trying to remember.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, "Oh my god,
my most recent letter is missing." It's like, where did it go? Oh my god, who took that? That's not even part of the story.
It was like something you'd see in Zelda or something, where you're just like, "Oh my god, I gotta help this person."
She could have tried harder to leave, but she didn't. But she did try, and he kept like being he kept being really sad. So
I'm on the side. My own personal opinion is that I think basically for the most part, Janeway handled this as best she could given the circumstance.
Yeah, like she always does.
But there is some Jesse is pro killing Tuvix, as she always does. Janeway is presented with a lot of moral dilemmas, and this is an early one. And one reason why I love it so much is this is not a moral dilemma about ruining a whole planet or a whole sector or risking all thousands of lives.
The glorious starship.
The moral dilemma here is strictly, is it appropriate to use this gentleman's help when it's based off of something that you know not to be true? And the counterpoint, Dan, to your point is, yes, she did try to leave a few times. The point where she started to stay was when he made it more clear
that he was useful.
That he might have access to the prison, that he was familiar with it because his wife went there, because he lost his daughter there.
How old did he think she was? That's my question. Because on the one hand, he must have assumed she was like an adult or adultish, but on the other hand, he kept being like, "Oh, you and your games, you and your fantastic
stories.
You and your story." Oh yeah, that's right. That's
I love your stories.
That one.
I love your stories.
I think given the context.
So wait, so I guess we're to assume we're to assume that he's so fucked up in the head that like he's just looking at her as a whole. But it still was kind of weird. It was like, I don't know how old you think she is.
I think Joel Grey presented it well because it is complex. It is a complex thing to convey, which is A, he's delusional to begin. So he's already got this trauma-induced delusion.
He's got some trauma.
This guy, he's got trauma-induced delusions.
You know what I heard? The sports junkies once said drama.
The sports junkies, that's a local sports radio.
Yeah.
You could not be more off-brand,
they used to be syndicated to a few other stations around the U.S., but...
All right. That's not the point.
Instead of drama, I was making my own. Instead of drama,
sports junkies.
Instead of drama, they would say drama.
Drama. Okay.
Rotisserie chicken. Rotisserie chicken with French
Super
fries.
Super Mario buns.
I love Mario. You were saying something that was trauma. You were saying trauma instead of drama.
I'm saying that.
You meant to say drama, but you said trauma.
Kalem has
he meant to say drama.
He has trauma induced delusions.
Traumatic. So
that's point number one.
I've had trauma.
Why don't you tell us about it, Jesse?
It's a humble brag. It's like, oh, I've seen some fucked up shit. No, okay, we got to go to a break in a second. But what I wanted to get out is he's delusional is layer one. Layer two, the trauma that caused that delusion is the loss of his wife and daughter. So him imagining Janeway as one of those is fine. Okay. Yes, she left when she was presumably, I don't know, a teenager?
Teenager?
I think that's what we, whatever the
was
alien
was she a teenager
equivalent.
Or something? Hey, what was she, man? Was she like a teenager or something, man? Hey, man. Right. Hey, man.
Good. That's a good character you're workshopping live on air.
Hey, man.
That's the hey, man character.
Hey, man. Hey, man.
Hey, man.
There's a, is that David Bowie? Is this like, hey, man.
Hey, man.
Hey, man.
Cat people. But what I was saying cat people. David Bowie. What I was saying was that
I've never seen such a willful child.
We're very close to concluding this point.
How close are you?
Yes,
close?
Because you were asking about the whole, what does he view her as? I think we're understanding that he's viewing Janeway as like multiple ages, because he's treating her sometimes as almost an infant or a young child.
Because he's
other
nuts.
Times as a teenager, other times as an adult, mm-hmm. which he presumably can project that his, you know, he's hoping his daughter is an adult by this point.
If so we can presume
a number of years.
We
ago.
Can presume that she at least lived to her early 20s. Like,
I wouldn't
late
say
teens,
that.
Early
I think
20s.
I imagine, and I don't know if I'm getting this from the text or it was just a misapprehension on my part.
The text?
Yes, from the text of the show.
You mean the subtext?
No, the text.
The actual the text.
There was no text. You read text.
Okay.
You hear it.
All right, friend. You're free. Okay.
The so actors Dan's, were reading
Dan's
it.
Smiling. I mean, he knows the text is a term of art. It's a literary term.
Term d'art.
I don't know.
He's teasing me with his eyes. He's
I
not,
don't know.
He's not giving me the benefit of
vocalizing. We have insufficient evidence to dismiss either conclusion.
Okay. yes. I think she's... my point is, I think she was a teenager. But we...
Then what happens?
We don't know yet.
Yeah.
All right.
So teenager. So she was at least a late teenager.
Or in her, I don't know.
Is there something weird about saying that?
No, it doesn't matter. I just don't. There's not enough evidence. Play the. You got to play the Tuvok. The Tuvok. Like, you already played it, but that's.
We
the
have
one
insufficient evidence to dismiss either conclusion.
That's what I wanted to say. All right.
A glorious starship.
Yes, we will be right back.
We are back.
Who knew talking could be so exhausting?
Talking could be so exhausting.
Exhausting.
I always have known that.
I have this labeled as dumb voice guy. I played this earlier.
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, one more time.
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
Hey, wait, man. Will you wake me? Hey, man. Hey, man. It's cool that they have the same rank structure as the, like, the U.S. Navy. Yeah.
You can figure it out.
That's quite serendipitous. Serendipitous.
It is indeed.
Everybody has the Navy.
One time, Dorden was all like,
I'd wish you luck,
except for the
but what you'll need is a miracle.
Hey, wait.
Who's that guy, Dorden?
I don't know. Jesse was talking over it.
I'd wish you luck, but what you'll need is a miracle.
And all I could think of, all I need is you. What I need is a miracle.
A miracle.
All I need is you. That's all I could think of when he said that.
That's
line.
All you could think
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you wrote it down in your notes.
Yep.
And you explained
you're a
that
sensitive
to us.
Fellow. Yep.
Yeah. I'd wish you luck, but what you'll need is a miracle.
And I need is you. Wait, I did it wrong.
I'd wish you luck, but what you'll need is a miracle.
All I need is you.
I enjoyed the fact that the resolution to this episode, at least the resolution to the main plot bit, it was a good, I like these complications because you don't want it to be too easy. You don't want it to be like, here's our plan and then we do it.
I thought they were going to I thought what was going to happen is by like accusing them of being subversives. I like the word subversives. Instead of
that makes me nervous.
The act of accusing them of that was going to turn them into that, but that's not really what happened. Yeah. They did become subversives, but it was because of this old man, which was actually that was a nice. I like that better than the. Well, I don't know which I like better. It'd be kind of neat to like be like, yeah, I wasn't subversive until you accused me of being subversive. But they've done. I'm sure they've done all of them. Every time, anyway, so it doesn't matter. They're both equally good.
They've done all of them every time. They. Those Star Trek people.
Big Star Trek.
No, but the plot resolving with...
Plot.
So they get this plan where they're like, okay, we know how to get into the prison, but we need to get weapons. So, okay, we go talk to the shady guy who maybe can get us weapons. And then it turns out that guy gets arrested... And Janeway is able to suss out the shiny jackboots of the fascist thug who has tortured the guy to get the information about wearing a blue vest or whatever.
Yeah, that blue vest.
So Janeway successfully managed to avoid getting in arrested.
Because are we to the part where she looked at the shoes?
Yes.
Yeah, so the shoes... You know, Shawshank Redemption was released like just a year prior.
So you think they did a Shawshank?
I think they did a Shawshank thing. I think that's what they did.
Because in Shawshank Redemption, there's a joke about how often do you look at a man's shoes?
I don't know if that was a joke. It was more like a...
No, it was a joke.
Well, I mean, it was a story about like...
It's a gag.
It's a gag. It's a story about the horrors of prison.
Shawshank Redemption is full of gags.
It's full of gags. Okay.
And that's one of the gags.
That is one of the gags.
You're
right.
How often do you look at a man's shoes?
You're right.
Waka, waka, waka.
It's kind of like...
this one, Janeway is like, I look at them all the time. There might be coffee in those shoes.
It's kind of like after Jurassic Park... park, velociraptors are in everything. And this is a lesser remembered one, I think, but after Dances with Wolves,
there were wolves in everything.
There was no. The word
Jurassic Wolf.
The word Tatanka was being thrown around a lot.
Tatanka.
There was a pro.
Wasn't there a pro wrestler named Tatanka?
Yeah, and I mean he pro wrestled before Dances with Wolves, but I think he took the name Tatanka after that movie. Plus,
wasn't there a wrestler named Bam Bam Bigelow?
Yes, he's dead.
Wasn't there a wrestler named...
We're gonna play this game.
Macho Man Randy Savage?
Yeah, for a while he was known as the Macho King because he stole the crown from Jerry the King Lawler.
And Rowdy Roddy Piper is also deceased.
Yeah. Do you
Jerry Lawler fought Andy Kaufman for that whole... Yeah. That was a gag.
Yep. Did you know about the wrestler named Jake the Snake?
Yeah. he was in a documentary, and in the documentary he was like behind the scenes smoking crack, apparently, according to the documentary. And he came out afterwards and was like, that was a fucked up documentary, basically.
I heard that crack was a hell of a drug.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you heard that crack was whack.
It is whack.
Okay, so that's been It's Got Wrestling, and now we're back to It's Got Star Trek, where we talk about Star Trek Voyager.
Wait, you said now we're back from It's Got Wrestling. You're the one who started that conversation, Patrick.
Okay, you're being very accusatory, and you did. I was being playful. I wasn't acting like we were having a problem. I'm just saying, like, now we're done with the wrestling talk.
We have insufficient evidence to dismiss either conclusion.
That clip is inappropriate in this context. Not inappropriate, it doesn't function properly.
It does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
You're just making shit up now.
Don't move.
Did you run out of clips?
No, I got plenty of clips.
Prove it.
Listen to me.
Willie!
Hey, Willie!
Got any
cat? What does that mean?
Where were we? Okay, there. Oh, yeah, plot resolved. Oh, yes.
Then what happens?
Oh, yes. What I was meant to say is they can't get the weapons, and so Janeway comes up with a new plan using a sexy ruse to get weapons from the guards in the prison.
She poses as a good time.
That is a practical plan. It's a ballsy plan, and you have to have enough confidence that you can pull it off, but that is a good plan to be like, I will go up, I will... pretend like I'm going to tug on this dude's wiener.
And I think it was this guy.
And then I'm going to like take his gun from him.
I think it was this guy.
Wake me if the lieutenant shows up, will you?
I think it was that guy.
Was it that guy or the other guy?
I don't know.
It was weird. They had the two guys and one other guy was
that
looming.
That guy was sleeping.
The second guy was all looming and like kind of getting up and he kept like hitching his pants up. But he didn't like go all the way to join. It was weird a little bit how that was directed.
I'll tell you one thing. You wouldn't catch Jean-Luc Picard pulling that seductive maneuver.
Nope.
Oh, you said that earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, but I'm just reminding you
but
in case you forgot.
Now you're saying more of a jokey voice.
Because he's totally Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Who's Patrick Stewart?
Completely Patrick.
Who is?
Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, he wasn't accusing you of being Patrick Stewart.
Oh, okay.
Did you think do you think Jesse was accusing you of being Patrick Stewart?
I thought he was accusing Kate Mulgrew of being Patrick Stewart.
No, Kate Mulgrew is not Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart was never Mrs. Columbo.
No.
Patrick Stewart was never in Throw Mama from the Train.
Nope.
Higgins mission! Higgins mission! Don't throw me off the train!
Erwin!
Get those goodies!
Erwin!
Get those goodies!
Flick shoes!
Yeah, you're gonna get those goodies! Don't throw me off the train! Yeah!
I like your blending of Anne Ramsey and Eric Cartman.
I know it's Eric Cartman.
Lame.
Lame, not cool.
Erwin!
It was pretty obvious she was going to end up with that necklace at the end. You knew the last scene would be her looking at that necklace.
Yeah, but
it was fine. I had a problem with it. No, I didn't have a problem with it. I'm flailing.
No, you're acting defensive when I...
No, I'm not acting defensive. I'm flailing. No, I was just making it clear before you decided to jump in with something smart.
I was just going to say that, yes, sometimes these things are predictable. I don't mind they're predictable when they're done well and it fits all together well. It's like, okay, yes, she's going to end up with the necklace. Now, the little bit of weirdness with the necklace is she was all like, you know, when they were trying to trade for weapons, he was all like, you give me that necklace, I'll give you some weapons. She's like, oh, I couldn't. And then Kalem was all like...
We already went over all this.
We didn't specifically state that. Kalem said, no, go ahead and you can use the necklace to sell it. And the thing was, is at the time she was like, oh, okay, But like he was saying, like anything to get her back.
Yes.
And then Janeway is like, all right, cool. Even though like she knows in her head.
I said the same fucking thing. I said that exact same thing. Word for word.
I probably just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, I think you weren't. That. I think you weren't.
Well, when I listen back to this, when I edit it, I'll hear that part and I'll be all rueful about it. I'll be like, well, you know what?
We were talking about, because I brought up, because you brought up how people online were saying that she was taking advantage of him.
And that was an example.
And that was an example where, like, she knew that that guy, I said that exact same thing. Anyway.
Well, we'll go back and listen.
Play back
and
the
I'll
tape.
Decide whether or not to feel guilty about not paying attention to you properly or not.
Well, I know, I already know that this is a common occurrence from everyone. I know, I brought up,
like, stuff that you said and everybody said.
Right. I think we bounce better when we pay attention to each other more, but that's fine.
What'd you just say?
I don't know. I can't remember.
No, that was a gag.
That was a gag.
That was an old-fashioned gag.
Thank you.
But yes, I guess I've gotten most of the point out about the whole resolution of the plot thing. How it's not so easy, right? But it all makes sense in the context of her figuring out a way to get the weapons and. We're watching our heroes here. We know they're going to win in the end. We've got this boring B story up in orbit where they're just sort of semi-competently
it's
going
like,
through.
Oh,
the,
there's an electrical storm. Let's hide behind that. Oh, there's 85 cannons. Oh no, it's like 85. Like, what does that even really mean to us? Well, I don't know what that means. Like,
and yeah, we have to trust because the camera goes to Harry when they say that, and he's got a look on his face that's kind of like maybe that's. Something to worry about, but it wasn't clear. Whereas, if Worf were back there, he'd be all like, oh shit, or whatever. He'd react in some way to be like, oh, that's some shady business.
That's what Worf would have said.
Yeah. Well, he would have said it with his eyes.
Metaphasic shields.
Say that three times fast.
Metaphasic. Beyond.
Metaphasical.
Above phase,
metaphasical.
Beyond.
Metaphasic.
I just have, in my notes, I just have two words written. Tuvok screamed. Tuvok screaming. Why do I have to? I just wrote down Tuvok screaming.
That's a reference to when he was in prison and Alana was saying, like, was that you screaming?
Yeah, I don't know why I put that in there, though. Although above it I have written, oh, yeah, she's wearing some kind of Kes outfit. B'Elanna, if you look at her outfit, it kind of looks Kes-ish, except not as bright in colors, darker colors.
You mean her disguise, her local disguise?
Yeah, her local disguise.
She might have borrowed
well, they,
some clothes
they are in the
from
same,
Kes.
They are in the same quadrant, so it would follow that they would wear the same clothes, right?
So. I don't think so.
It's just like every planet.
All the planets in
every
the
planet. Every planet is one style of person.
They just have a different style of nose. It's always the same clothes, different nose.
Like that old
aphorism.
The whole planet looks like everyone's into the same shit on the planet. That's what happens when you travel in space. We don't have like states and countries. We just have planets and quadrants and solar systems.
This is the planet where everyone paints pictures. That's their main industry,
right,
is painting oil paintings.
I like in Hitchhiker's Guide. I'm thinking the Red Dwarf book. There was like a trash planet. Which is the one that had a trash planet?
It's funny that you're specifically calling out the Red Dwarf book. They might have had a trash planet on Red Dwarf. They had it in Marvel.
Well, I just remember specifically them talking about
in
like
Thor
flying over a planet and just like dropping shit, and the whole planet was just like a landfill trash. I don't know. I don't think that wasn't Hitchhiker's Guide. I guess that was probably Red Dwarf.
I'm pretty familiar with Hitchhiker's Guide, and I'm not.
I think Unplanned Trek was talking about Red Dwarf. I think I heard them talking about
it. I should hope they were. I should hope so. okay, let's see here. Any final thoughts before we start to wrap things up? I think we covered the main bits and pieces. It is very sad, this whole business, especially at the end. And again, Joel Grey does such a great job of actually portraying this character, but it's again upsetting when he manages to stab Ogris, presumably fatally, and those guards, when they see Ogris, they were just like, fuck this,
yeah, they're like uh-uh. That's like, they're like, get out of here, like, man.
We got our motorcycles are revved up and ready to go.
Yeah,
right, around the corner.
They weren't even like, oh shit, and ran away. They just kind of slunk back. They're like,
carefully walked back.
Yeah.
Which was a bit of levity to added to
a
scene.
I don't know if they meant it to
it clearly wasn't, but it kind of, I think it served in that function in contrast to Joel Grey is Caleb dying, being like, I did it for you. And Janeway's all like, yes. Oh, they're alive. Everyone's alive. They lied to you. Everyone's fine. And again, yes, you could have a moral debate about whether or not to be truthful to somebody in their dying moments. I think it's...
You know, yeah, I know.
It's pretty easy to be like, come on, you can say whatever nice shit...
yeah, I mean, my first instinct was to be like, well, she's fucking with him. Yeah. But then I was like, yeah, it's like...
It's like he's dying.
He's dying. Let
but
him.
It's... and it sucks that he has to die.
This is...
I mean, he doesn't have to die, but the writers chose to have him die to sacrifice himself.
This is the Caleb dying breath.
It yeah. sounds like some sort of Mario ghost.
Orbital sensor net.
At that point,
Bilana's on it.
She was crying at that point.
Yeah, she was sad. She wasn't crying, was she?
Yeah. Oh, Janeway at the end? She was bawling her eyes out.
Was she? How did I miss that? Do I just turn off emotions like that?
I think maybe. You might have that thing.
I might have that thing.
That Dexter thing.
The Dexter thing. Oh, it's, that thing.
As long as you only kill the bad guys, so it's just
it,
fine.
Is it so? What is it? Is it a sociopathy or a psychopathy?
I don't know. I ain't
one of them means
clinical therapist.
One of them means you have a temper, and the other means other one you don't, or something. But they both involve not caring about people like dying or something. I don't really know the difference. What about socialism versus communism?
Okay, I'm better equipped in terms of my education expertise to define the differences between those two than psychopathy and what was the other thing?
Sociopathy,
yes. Those we would have to look up. We'd have to go to Wikipedia. But I'm not in the mood to define.
I know the answer. I don't feel like it.
Exactly.
I know the answer, but I don't feel like it.
It would be imprudent of me to waste the time of our podcast audience.
I know the answer, but
regurgitating definitions which they can easily find.
I know. Google is your friend.
www.wikipedia.
Google is your friend.
.org.
Google is your friend. I know the answer, but I just don't feel like telling ya.
You know, you ever
get the, on it.
You get those, you see those questions online, like on Reddit or something like
no,
that?
No, never.
And somebody's all like, they're recounting somebody being a dickhead or something, like usually like while driving or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're all like telling the story. And then like all the responses are explaining to the original poster that like they're like a piece of shit.
Oh, is that like, am I the asshole?
No, but the am I the asshole is funny because people are always posting shit there. And most of the time they are the asshole. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's just fake. I'm talking about when you find that kind of thing, except they're A, not asking if they're the asshole, and B, mm-hmm. it's just out in the wild. It's not in a specific subreddit, right? They're just, they're assuming everyone's going to agree with them, and then everyone's like, man, it's always a dude, by the way. It's like, dude, you suck. Yeah, that was
I believe you.
Yes, that was a minor aside. We do like to include small amounts of off-topic conversation.
And what happens?
During the podcast. Yeah, just to sort of increase engagement a little bit. It's all a carefully orchestrated thing we do here. We have multiple algorithms here. We have Dan's episode picking algorithm.
That's not possible.
And then we have a series of other algorithms that assign all three of us. We get assigned various tasks like.
And what happens?
When to be obtuse. That usually falls on me.
I can see.
When to repeat things ad nauseum. Definitely, usually falls to Dan, but not always.
I only repeat stuff when I get interrupted. That's when I repeat stuff. And so it's not technically repeating if I keep getting interrupted trying to make my point. In fact, I often repeat myself just to make the point, like, we're going to keep going through this until someone doesn't interrupt me. That's what I do. It's all very planned out. Jesse, what the fuck, man?
Well, Jesse is often the algorithm often assigns Jesse the role of indicating when it's time to go.
It's a request.
Because he just starts making a bunch of gibberish sound. Okay. I think we've covered everything that we need to cover.
Hey, do you know what this part is from?
The love of pride. The love of pride. The love of pride.
No.
The love of pride.
I took it.
Balana's on it.
I took an earnest try in my brain to suss out where
the
that's from.
Pride.
But I don't.
The love of pride.
Okay, it's this.
We need this completely filled. We don't have time to haggle over price.
The love of pride.
All right.
There was that.
That was good. That was good. Yeah. That was a good one.
That was purposely tricky.
Yeah.
I didn't expect anyone to get it.
I like these. I like these. These are good. I always enjoy the opportunity.
When else do I repeat myself ad nauseum? I'd be interested to know this.
That's it.
He's kind of doing it now.
You just can't just throw something like that out there.
I think you perhaps missed the context of the joke of the algorithm assigning us various duties. It was comically take a stereotype of each of our personalities and sort of extend upon it.
Yeah, well, stereotypes sometimes, not always, sometimes they're based on something. And so if you're making a stereotype about me, I'm assuming it's applicable to me for a reason that you have observed.
Or that that I perceive that I have observed.
Because I
may have misperceived or misobserved.
Right. Now you're just playing games.
I would say, on the up and up,
what you're doing, that's a microaggression. That's a microaggression.
No. For real, it's not.
It is a microaggression. No. It is.
No, because I'm actively kicking you in the shins right now. Okay. So that will do it for us this week. That was a very good episode of Voyager. I hadn't seen that in a very long time. I've done a few watch-throughs of Voyager, but I watched it all when it was on the air originally. I think most of us got caught most of the episodes right when they were.
And what happens?
But been a long time since I saw that episode, so
what does that mean?
I didn't remember a lot of it, and I really enjoyed it. It was upsetting. It was an intense episode. It was another example of how I think people often describe Deep Space Nine as sort of the darker Star Trek, and then Voyager was like more like TNG. Voyager was often way darker than TNG.
Yeah.
It didn't get as dark as Battlestar Galactica as maybe it should have given the context. That's why Ron Moore did Battlestar Galactica in part because he argued that they made that error with Voyager, having it lost out there, not going as dark as they could have. But Voyager had a lot of dark stuff, and a lot of particularly Janeway being put in the position to make some navigate some fucked up situations, and this was certainly a fucked up emotional situation. Low stakes, right? We're talking about a few people's lives, a few things going on here, but really engaging. A good example of how you can have such an engaging story with fairly limited stakes when it's very character level stakes. But I thought that was great. So next week, we don't know what we're going to talk about next week because we have to run it through Dan's algorithm. And Dan's algorithm...
Can you elaborate?
Okay, yes, thank you. Dan's algorithm will take this week's podcast, which we're finishing recording right now, and it will ingest it and pop out a list of which Star Trek episodes we should watch based on a comparison to the various scripts that are out there. So, if you want to find out what you should be watching listen to our podcast in preparation for listening to our podcast next week,
that's all I wanted to know.
Keep an eye out for us on social media at It's Got Star Trek, Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, YouTube. You can check out our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com. That would be awesome. You can rate and review. That'd be cool too, wouldn't it? And of course, in the not too distant future, we're going to start doing coverage of all the new episodes of Strange New Worlds.
Okay, let's do it.
That's my favorite one. That's really, yeah. I know it's not going to be an audience favorite, maybe, but for me, that's great. Avery Brooks rules. But yes, and who knows what we'll do next week? We've done just a DS9 Voyager, so I don't know. Maybe it'll be TNG or something like that. We'll see.
Evidence.
Okay, but I think did I get all the back matter? Did I finish
enough?
All the stuff?
Yep.
I think
you got all the back matter. Is that what you just said?
Yes, I'm starting to.
You got the fucking back matter?
Yeah, like on the back of a book.
Rakana.
No.
Her name was Rakana.
Ralkana.
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 That's what I wasn't getting. I wasn't quite getting the Ral. Good.
Orbital sensor net.
Okay. Well, follow us and you'll see what we'll talk about. We'll talk about it next week. It's going to be great. Regardless, we can guarantee.
It's got
understood.
It's going to be great. That's been Star Trek. That's had Star Trek. All right.
We'll, had it.
We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
B'Elanna's on it.
My Salot fought a La Mancha in the Langon foothills.
We ain't found shit.